somebody says, you know, the 49ers black uniforms would be really cool with the black helmet to match. I would go the other way if I'm the Niners. I don't want to look like the Raiders if I'm the Niners. The Raiders are gone. No team should be wearing a black home uniform in the Bay really ever again, as far as I'm concerned. The Niners, if they are going to go with an alternate helmet, should forget the what Ray told us earlier, that they had red in their past. If I were them, I would go with the clean, all-white uniforms with a white helmet and the 49ers logo on that with a red stripe. That would be a little bit sexy in my mind.
You're just inventing new stuff over here.
Well, that's what we're doing here. I mean, let's go for it.
I have a problem with white helmets in general because it makes the players look hydrocephalic. And it's
Excuse me?
What's hydrocephalic?
Like you have a gigantic head.
Like Spaceballs?
I don't know if it's like Spaceballs. I mean, that's a reference that gets by me, but no, it's a...
I would have thought you were a Spaceballs guy.
It never hit me.
Okay. Dark helmet?
No, I think when you look at like the Arizona Cardinals, I mean, they've tried to do everything with their uniform, but they've kept that white helmet, and it makes everybody look like their heads are outsized. And I think it's one of the reasons why they never get in the playoffs.
Like, I like the old Houston Oilers white helmet, too. I think the best uniform in college football is Penn State's all whites. Just nothing fancy about us. We are just here to beat you today, not make a fashion statement.
I think they should go to white numbers on the white jerseys.
Well,
that way, if they're gonna go big.
So Nike has done that basically with Oregon uniforms, and if they don't have the right piping, like I saw an Oregon uniform once, and I used to hate Oregon uniforms because I'm a tradition guy, and then it dawned on me. Oregon's tradition is there is no tradition. So, like, I respect it now. I totally do. I know you want to lean in here, Grandy Man. Go ahead.
Just quickly, the worst sport to call, I mean, from my experience at Oregon, it's the Oregon football spring game, because that's when they bring out the most vibrant, bright colors, and you can barely see numbers. It's terrible.
Yeah, it was the Niners black uniforms, where they had black numbers on the black uniforms, and there was just, like, a red piping around them that... It made it really hard to see.
I think it was red numbers, but it was still almost impossible.
Very, very hard to pick up the number off of the jersey without some sort of piping around it. And I've seen Oregon pull that off with silver piping, which isn't enough to separate the number from the jersey.
I think the important thing here is tune in next Thursday at 4:05 for more Inside Oregon play-by-play with Mark Grandy.
Totally.
Yeah. That's inside knowledge we just got. I don't know if you guys...
That is, that Oregon spring game.
It was a humble brag. But in his experience, the toughest sport to call is the spring game.
Next week, I'm definitely going to ask about Oregon baseball uniforms.
There we go.
I can't wait.
There we go.
The best uniform story ever was when the NHL first decided to go to nameplates on the back of the jerseys. And Harold Ballard, the owner of the Toronto Maple Leafs, who was a crusty old bastard in about 800 different ways, objected to it so much that when the Leafs were wearing their blue... He had blue nameplates with blue lettering, so nobody could see them anyway. And the league fined him like $100,000, which was like $3 million in today's money.
Yeah.
And they just said, you are going to change that. And he kept paying the fine until about midseason because he was just that ornery a cuss.
You know what my favorite uniform story is? I bet you can guess.
The shorts.
No, it's when the White Sox tried to put collars on their throwbacks a couple years ago, and Chris Sale cut them up with scissors so he didn't have to wear it.
Well, the collars were there. They were that old jersey, and they were wearing those with shorts back then. I mean, the shorts were the most offensive part to me.
The shorts were definitely the worst, but those jerseys are terrible.
And you know whose idea that was?
Beck.
Bill Veeck.
No, Bill Veeck's wife.
Well, same difference.
It's not the same. He asked his wife, what do you think we ought to do? And she came up with the collars because that's what the White Sox wore in 08 or whatever.
And show off the legs, baby.
Yeah, and then show off the legs.
Never mind, everyone's out here trying to slide.
Yeah, forget that.
Skin burns everywhere.
Well, it was a bad team, so you didn't really worry about Eric Soderholm's shins.
Yeah, no, there wasn't a lot of hustle to even really worry about, I guess.
Oh, good times. Yeah.
So let me ask you this, Grandy Maldonado, since we were going over your Oregon broadcasting prowess. Have you done a game at Autzen Stadium?
Yes.
Did you get a regular season game at Autzen?
Yes, multiple. Yeah, so the student station at Oregon, we broadcast as many games as we could. We did some road games, but all the home games too.
Nice. Now, how many did you get? Were you lucky to get like 2 your senior year? Because this is the way it happened at Indiana. Your freshman year, you didn't get a game. You're lucky if you got a practice. Your sophomore year, maybe you got a game. Your junior year, maybe they'll even throw a road game your way. Your senior year, you were getting 2 games, and one of them was probably homecoming. The other was going to be Purdue.
So I'm not sure how it works at other schools, but
well,
I'll tell you,
before you give us the Oregon story, at Pomona College, you walk into the student radio station and you say, what if we put some basketball games on? And they say, we have indie rock shows during that time.
Yeah, they're like, what sports?
At Oregon, I think the sports station there is smaller than at other Power 5 schools. So actually, my senior year, I got to do the whole season. My junior year, someone else did it his senior year.
Don't
and
sell
so
yourself
on.
Short,
there you go.
Grandy.
No, that's
hey,
that's good.
They don't
go,
let
man.
Just anybody do all the games their senior season. That's you're a stud kid.
You know what? You just made the argument that means don't go to Syracuse. Seriously.
Honestly, I got a lot of good reps. So
Yeah. No, don't go to – and look at where it's brought you.
Yep. On the other hand.
Look at where it's landed you. Yeah.
Go to Syracuse.
All right, cut the mic. Do not go to Syracuse. If you want to be a broadcaster, do not go to Syracuse. The line of people who are looking for the same opportunity as you stretches to 1,100 Nick Wright wannabe douchebags.
Yeah, you don't want to be Nick Friedell.
Stay away. Work for Friedell. Work for Friedell, but for the most part – go to a place where you're going to get every single game your senior year. It's better to get the reps than wait in a long line in college. Trust me. Newhouse School of Broadcasting, overrated.
Shout out to the texter who said, I see your Schwartz is as big as mine.
Thank you very much.
It all comes full circle back to Spaceballs.
Ludicrous speed. Now.
It's one of my favorites.
It's great. And you're a Mel Brooks guy.
I am a Mel Brooks guy. It's probably a hole in my already chasm-sized.
I imagine you're not a Star Wars or Star Trek guy, though. So maybe that's why
it's not really. Definitely nailed that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why probably why it's not your favorite Mel Brooks.
Star-spangled savings can be yours at Outdoor Supply Hardware. Save some George Washington's, a few Uncle Sam essentials, half-price patriotic decor. Oh, yeah, they got it at Osh. Decks with canopies, dining sets and grills on sale at your neighborhood Osh through the 4th of July. Outdoor Supply Hardware, 12 locations at osh.com. When we come on back, we got a chance for you to win $1,000. And joining us at 4:30, Alex Pavlovich talking about the first place San Francisco Giants here on 95.7 The Game.
Demon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Another chance to splash the cash, your chance to win $1,000. Text the code word PICTURE to 72881. PICTURE to 72881. This is brought to you by your local Toyota dealers. Let's go places. A multi-state contest, message and data rates indeed apply. We've got Alex Pavlovich joining us in about 12 minutes to talk about the first place San Francisco Giants, who are, every single sign of that might be the best team in baseball. They're kind of flashing it. The only thing they don't have are the marquee players that give you the preseason nationwide hype. But my gosh, what they have done and the Farhan resume that he has put together, it's overwhelming here what's happening. 48-26, that is the best record in Major League Baseball. They're 4 games up on the Dodgers, who just got swept by the Padres, by the way. 4 games up on the Dodgers, and here's where things start to get like really interesting. Like, what do you look for to prove that you are a good baseball team? There are 2 things that I always go to. Pardon me if I'm repeating myself. I go to run differential and whip. How many more runs are you scoring than your opponent? How hard is it to get on base against you? The Giants lead the NFL. Boy, that would be impressive, wouldn't it? The Giants lead Major League Baseball in run differential. Now plus 101. Excuse me, it's the second best run differential in baseball. They're plus 101. They have the number one whip in all of baseball now. I mean, the Dodgers and the Padres are right there on their heels for sure. But a 1.11 whip. Why? Because they walk the fewest amount of human beings in Major League Baseball. The fewest walks issued by this team. All the little things, all those tiny little metrics that you normally look to prove that a team isn't as good as you think they are, when you start looking for the Giants and looking for the metrics to prove they're not as good as you think they are, the metrics are kind of coming back where they're even better than you think they are. That's the crazy thing about this team. The information you seek to doubt them will only make you believe more in what your eyes are telling you.
Even their expected wins per score margin is about even with what they should be doing. So it's not like Houston, which has a better run differential, and therefore their record ought to be better than it is. You know, it's also they're not overachieving based on the results they're putting out. That probably is the most compelling evidence that they are likely to hang for a while. Now, when the schedule gets tougher, maybe all those numbers change. But other than this series against the A's and then the Dodger series after that, they're not faced with a lot of tough eggs to crack.
Yeah, but
between now and the All-Star game.
Yeah, but we kind of keep saying that. And isn't that at a certain point just that the Giants are better than all these teams, other than three or four in the entirety of Major League Baseball? Because you're right, Ray. I mean, we talked a lot about when they were like right after they swept Cincinnati, right? They just finished that remarkable road trip. They were 28-16. Yeah, but it's going to get a lot tougher. And then they lost three straight to the Dodgers, right? And
here it comes.
And you know what? Not only do they have more with the Dodgers around the corner, but the Cubs are playing well, and the Nationals aren't bad, and the Phillies aren't bad, right? And all they've done since that sweep at the hands of the Dodgers is 20-7.
And again, I'm not trying to diminish what they've done because the numbers are the numbers and you have to play everybody. They played a lot of roadkill.
Well, right. But Ray, I guess my point is, who's not roadkill to them other than the Dodgers and Padres and maybe A's on the rest of their schedule? They're still going to get to play a lot of Arizona and Colorado. And, you know, I guess the Mets aren't roadkill, but are they super threatening? I guess the Braves aren't roadkill. Milwaukee's playing well lately, so they're probably one of the tougher teams. But
the Giants,
at least 50% of the remaining schedule is just as roadkilly as anything else they've played.
The Giants are putting up the sort of year where the team that other teams worry about playing is you.
Right.
You're the hunted, not the hunter.
There's only a few teams like that every year.
Yeah. And look, four games up on the Dodgers, second best run differential in baseball. Right there are two sentences nobody expected to say four games into the year had they started 4-0 and the Dodgers started 0-4. Like, there's no chance we were going to say that out loud at any point in time this year. Let me give you some numbers here. This is just the Giants pitching staff. We're not even going to get into the lineup. This is just the pitching staff. They get the third best ERA in baseball, 3.22. Their 10 shutouts are two more than any other team in baseball. They have the fewest walks in baseball, and because of that, the number one whip in baseball. They've got the third most quality starts with 34. By the way, this is where the A's are sneaky good. The A's are second in quality starts in baseball. The Dodgers are a runaway number one with 44. The Giants have the fourth fewest home runs surrendered, the seventh fewest hits allowed, the third fewest earned runs. They have the most saves in baseball with 27. And again, that's the part of the team that doesn't work well. Doesn't work well to the tune of most saves in baseball. Third best team fielding percentage, which I know isn't a pitching stat, but it's a defensive stat, so I'm going to put them together. The third best team fielding percentage with the third fewest errors committed. On that alone, you could have the worst offense in baseball, and on that alone, you are going to be a tough team to deal with. Then you add this to that, and this is the most home runs in Major League Baseball with 111. The third most RBIs in Major League Baseball with 353. They're fourth in runs scored, fifth in highest walk total, fifth highest on-base percentage, fourth best slugging percentage, third best on-base plus slugging in Major League Baseball. All they are
is the leader or in the top five of every single indicator of, is that an important stat for a baseball team to have? Yeah. I mean, we went into the year because of the hype, because of the payrolls, and because of the promise, rightfully saying the Dodgers are special, the Padres are special. There was nothing special about the San Francisco Giants coming into this year, which now makes them the most special team of them all.
And again, like, it's not that the Padres and Dodgers aren't special. Those are the second and third best winning percentages in the National League.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing that stands out, and it's one of those stats nobody pays attention to, other than their three openers, they've only had six starting pitchers this year. So they've kept their rotation intact throughout. And that's, I mean...
Are you counting Sammy Long in that?
I'm not counting Sammy Long in that until he gets a second start.
Okay.
But, you know, even at that...
Even if it's seven, that's still impressive.
Yeah. I mean, just because they're... I mean, the Arizona Diamondbacks have used 30 pitchers so far. Now, I realize that's an extreme.
30 starters?
30 pitchers.
Oh, okay.
And like 11 starters.
Whew.
You know, and granted, with openers, that becomes a slightly more deceiving stat. But when you can send out the same guys time after time in the same order, there's a level of consistency that you get that, frankly, is hard to beat. And one of the reasons why the Padres and Dodgers have not been able to keep pace is because they've had injuries to pitchers.
Yeah. And when two of those guys are doing what Gausman and DeSclafani have done, obviously that makes it even better to be able to throw them out time after time. And they are the two who have made all 15 of their opportunities to start. Which brings me to what I wanted to say. Because you said accurately at the beginning of all this that, you know, the Giants don't have the marquee names. And that's a fact. But they do have the performances. Like, it's not totally a strength in numbers thing going on here. It's marquee performances from guys who this time next year we might have to be calling marquee names if they keep this stuff up. I mean, obviously Buster Posey has been a marquee name and clearly is performing like one. Brandon Crawford is performing like a marquee middle of the lineup power hitter. Evan Longoria, when on the field, was performing like a marquee middle-of-the-order hitter. And again, old, but the name kind of is there. And with the pitchers, we've talked about it all year. Gausman's performing like a Cy Young winner, and DeSclafani's performing like the guy who got screwed out of the Cy Young because the other guy had too good of a year.
The only thing that prevents everyone in baseball from saying, bar none, the San Francisco Giants are the best team in this sport, are the ages of the players. That's it.
Yeah. Well, that and the lack of the name, right? Because
the players whose names you recognize are the old guys.
Exactly. But even like the DeSclafani and Gausman thing, right? Like, they're performing like DeGrom and Walker Buehler. If their names were DeGrom and Walker Buehler, we would be talking about this Giants team differently. Same thing with Brandon. If Brandon Crawford's name was Vlad Guerrero Jr., we'd be looking at the Giants differently right now.
Maybe, but there's one other thing. The rotation of the earth. There are a lot of people in the East who go to bed before the Giants do the thing they do every night, which is why people are going to suddenly realize right around the All-Star break, because that's usually when it starts to happen, when they realize the Giants, who probably should have been able to only send the minimum of one, are going to send three. And they're not going to send more only because they don't have a ton of guys that you would consider.
I think it could be four, right? Because you could, I mean, Posey's going to be in.
Posey's going to be in.
Crawford's going.
Probably in, although there are a lot of shortstops.
Why not Gausman and DeSclafani?
Because I think there are other pitchers who they will find. And also, because you have to take somebody from every team,
yeah.
Guys
well,
get
always
bumped
gets
off.
You. Right, that's true. And it may come down to whether the one guy from Arizona or whatever is a starting pitcher or not. Because DeSclafani, I mean, again, he's the dude who only didn't win the Cy Young because his teammate had a better year. Like, he has been spectacular.
Well, the other thing is they take fewer pitchers now than they used to, and they take more relievers.
Yeah.
And Jake McGee is not going to go.
No. In fact, if someone went, it would be Rodgers, wouldn't it?
Well, probably Taylor Rodgers, but Melanson's had a great year down at San Diego.
Yeah, it's going to be tough.
Hader. And if I mean, they've got closers.
And if it's Posey and Crawford and Gausman, the Giants, you're probably right that it stops there for the Giants. But I think it speaks to the depth and quality of this team that there's three or four other guys that could make a solid argument for it.
Yesterday was a special, crazy game. The fact that they came back and won in 13 innings, again, that right there is a rare thing. You're not going to see a lot of 13-inning games with a ghost runner starting extras on second. It happened yesterday, and then all of a sudden, we've got a 7-run top of the 13th. Giants win 9-3. Gausman and Ohtani had a hell of a pitcher's duel going on, and then the game flipped on its head. It felt like two different games got played in the same day, and to talk about both of them, we bring in Alex Pavlovich of NBC Sports, and always a pleasure to talk to you here, Alex. This is a team that continues to surprise us every single time they basically go out and play a series, man. They haven't lost a series in, what, 7-8 series in a row now since they got swept by the Dodgers?
Yeah, and it's, you know, that's why they're in first place. I think I saw last night the Padres just swept the Dodgers. They swept the Reds before that, and the Dodgers, we've seen them roll off some good runs too. But those teams also have not just been as consistent. So that's really what's keeping the Giants ahead of them right now. Is there hasn't been a lull. There hasn't been a week where you go like, oh, they lost two series in a row, and there hasn't been a month where they've had a bad stretch. So they just play consistent baseball. They find a way to win, and I thought yesterday they did not play very good baseball, but they found a way to win, and when you're going the way they are, you know, you'll take any break you can get. They got a couple of extra innings and then took advantage.
You know, Mike Tauchman, 0-for-5 with 5 strikeouts, working on, we haven't even decided, is that the titanium sombrero? Is that the unobtainium sombrero? I don't even know what 6 strikeouts would have been called. He ends up hitting that 3-run home run. He might be the most feast or famine player Farhan has ever let exist. It feels like he's got patience for him because when Tauchman does reach a moment, it defines that game. Does he have more house credit with Farhan because of that, or that they moved an important reliever to pick him up?
I think it's because of the first part. You know, they can do without Wandy Peralta, and they really replaced him pretty easily and have guys in the minors who can fill in there. But look, Tauchman, I've never really seen anything like it because he has like a 540, 550 OPS, and the offensive numbers have been really bad, but you know, he probably won a game in Texas for him with that grand slam. He probably won 2 games for him with his catches on Pujols and Juan Soto. So it's one of those guys who right now he might be at like 0.2, 0.3 wins above replacement, but he has made some huge impact plays for him. And what they say behind the scenes is he's working really hard to come out of this. And somebody who is, you know, he might be striking out, but he's not striking out on 3 pitches. Like, he still is seeing like 4.6 pitches per plate appearance and still lengthening that lineup. So they feel like he can be a part of this. And one benefit of being the best team in baseball is you do have some time. You can figure out if Mike Tauchman can be a part of this. And there's no urgency, really, to move on from a guy who's going to be hitting 8th or 9th for you. So I think that's a byproduct of them playing good baseball.
There may not be urgency, but they do have, you know, La Stella on a rehab assignment, right? And Longoria presumably coming back at some point. Do you think one of those things might end up being the thing that displaces him?
Yeah, you know, people ask me this question all the time, is what's going to happen when so-and-so comes back? And I always say, let's see what happens 2 days from now, because this team has somebody go down every other day.
Yeah.
And, you know, talking yesterday, you see him strike out 5 times, and you think, well, at the very least, they have to bring Wade Jr. back on Friday, or have to bring somebody else in here on Friday. And then Brandon Belt goes down. So yeah, they're going to have a spot anyway. I just tend to think these things with the Giants figure themselves out, and they'll try to keep their depth if they can.
One, what's the prognosis on Belt? And two, what do they do at first base if this is more than a 10-day deal?
We haven't heard anything, but, you know, I am concerned. I'm more concerned than I have been probably about any injuries all year, just because Brandon Belt had knee surgery 3 years ago on that same knee, and he had a microfracture procedure, and those those can be tough after a couple years. I mean, it's an interesting procedure, and something that if something happens there again, I mean, it's really tough to come back from. So I think there's probably some level of concern as he gets that MRI to make sure that this isn't related to what happened 3 years ago. And he told us, I mean, he said last year when he started to hit, he's like, I never felt right in 2019, even after I had the surgery. So it's important that knee is healthy for him. But as far as the team goes, it is one area, it's one position where as good as Brandon Belt is, and I have long been a believer in his all-around game and what he brings, they can fill in there. I mean, Wilmer Flores can play first when Longoria is back. Darren Ruff has done a really nice job for him. Lamont Wade Jr. Was really good when he filled in for him as well. So they can get by at first base if they have to.
Can we get our guy Alex Dickerson some reps at first base?
Yeah, that's, you know, another possibility. I mean, all of a sudden you have Yastrzemski playing every day. You have Duggar playing pretty much every day and a bunch of outfielders. So another guy potentially could fill in if this turns into a long-term thing.
Alex Pavlovich here on 95.7 The Game. Huge Bay Bridge series starts tomorrow, a well-timed off day for the Giants as Kapler and company start putting together the game plan. What are we going to see against a very good A's team?
Well, it's funny because I've always said no matter how good the Giants are, it seems like they play, or how bad they might be, it seems like they always play the Dodgers tough and give them all they can handle. And I think no matter how good the Giants have been or how bad the A's have been, or vice versa, it seems like the A's just always give them all they can handle.
Yeah, team that needs the series the least ends up winning it.
Yeah. So, and these two teams are, you know, two of maybe the four or five best in all of baseball. So I'm really looking forward to it. And more than anything, I mean, I'm sure you guys have seen this. I have watched San Diego just be absolutely rocking for a week now and have watched some other places that have gotten full capacity. And the Giants are finally going to get there or get pretty close this weekend. And I think they've been waiting a long time, years really. I mean, I don't know. We go back to 2016 maybe, the last time the ballpark's really been rocking consistently. So I think that's going to be really fun. And as far as the baseball goes, a really good test for them because, they have played teams over 500. They have played them well. One thing they really haven't done a whole lot this year is face two really good teams back-to-back, and they're going to have that over the next 5 days with the A's and the Dodgers. So a really interesting 5 days for them coming up.
This is sort of a lightweight question at this point, but is the word of mouth on the Giants such that they might get more than the three all-stars you would figure them to get, which would be Posey, Crawford, and Gaussman? Are people outside the Bay Area starting to glom onto this team, or is it still a wait and show me stage?
I think it's both. I've noticed a lot the last few weeks that there's certainly more attention. And for me, I mean, going down to Dodger Stadium and playing the way they did, and then doing what they did to the Cubs the next weekend, I think that really proves to a lot of people that this team is for real. But by the same token, I don't know that it's going to matter much when it comes to all-star voting. And they have those three guys who are locks. I mean, they should be automatic. And then after that, it probably comes down to a little bit of the puzzle and how many starting pitchers bow out of the game because they pitched on Saturday or Sunday, and does that get DeSclafani in? Or how many bad teams have to have a relief pitcher on this team just to have a representative, and does that impact Tyler Rogers? So I personally look at four, maybe five guys who are very deserving, but it is always tricky this time of year. And star power comes into it, and we've seen that with the voting.
So let's start with those four guys, the first four, likely and or potential all-stars in Posey, Crawford, Gaussman, DeSclafani. Certainly with the hitters, although Posey does have the club option for next year, but even to an extent with the pitchers, part of the appeal of their contracts is that none of them are under contract after this year.
Yeah.
If all these guys are performing at an all-star level all year long, do you think they're, other than Posey, I guess you pick up the club option, do the Giants bring the other guys back?
You know, I know they would love to have Gaussman back, and that's somebody that they hope to sign to a long-term deal, and they probably have some regrets about not just giving him whatever he wanted last offseason, because to me, he's, you know, Max Scherzer's going to be out there, some other guys are going to be out there, but we're talking about a 30-year-old who now is coming on. It could be potentially two seasons, and one of them's a short season, but I mean, two seasons of just absolutely electric ace number one starter stuff, and I think it's sustainable. I don't see how you can watch him and not think that this is something he keeps doing. I mean, he throws 98 and he has the best pitch in the game potentially in that splitter, and knows where both of them are going. So he is like your classic all of a sudden 5 years, $100 million type of guy. And I, the Giants have not wanted to be in those types of markets. But at the same time, I think Gosman's maybe one guy where you look and say, look, we can piece together a rotation every year, but we need that ace, and this is the guy. So it's going to be really interesting with him. Beyond that, I mean, I don't know that we've ever seen an offseason like this, because they could potentially have a whole new cast of characters, or they could bring everybody back. It's going to be fascinating, and I think it's really going to be person by person and what they want. And, you know, some of these guys came to San Francisco to prove themselves and to prove that they deserve bigger markets and they deserve more than a one-year deal for $3 million or $6 million. And they're going to have every right to go out there this offseason and look for that four-year, $48 million, or 3 years, $30 million, whatever it is. And I think the Giants will say, well, hey, good for you. It worked out just like it did with Drew Smyly. We're glad you got a big contract from the Braves, but we can go find somebody else and do the same thing.
Alex Pavlovich here on 95.7 The Game. Instead of wrapping up by asking you how much you dislike the All-Star Game uniforms, I want to go this direction. Let's keep it positive and interesting. Because last year was a gap year. The year before that was a wrap-it-up year. And this year was supposed to be a coming-out-of-the-gap year, where if you can compete and contend and play respectable baseball, that'll be fine enough for most in a situation where clearly going for it ain't the right thing to do. If this is how the Giants look in around-the-margin years, what will the Giants look like when the full-on depth and breadth of Farhan is in I am going for it mode? I'm done worrying about the Dodgers and the Padres. It's our turn. What would that look like, considering how good this looks?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest question going forward, and I honestly am just so fascinated by it, and I really have no idea, because I was thinking about this during the Angels series. Anthony Rendon is a complete shell of what he used to be, and he was somebody that I would have bet on 2 years ago. He was as solid as it gets in the National League, a perennial MVP candidate, always hit 30-something homers, played great defense. He was terrible for the Angels, and they're on the hook for, I think, 5 more years and like 180 more million. So if you're the Giants and you see something like that, like, do you really want to be out there spending that kind of money when you're proven that you can go get Wilmer Flores and Anthony DeSclafani and Alex Wood, and you find guys like Sammy Long? So I don't know. I frankly don't know which direction they're going to go. But I do think what's really exciting about them is that the farm system is going to produce some really good players, and it's going to produce guys who are here for 6 years, for 10 years, who are everyday players and everyday stars for them. And one thing they've shown is that there might not be anybody, maybe Tampa Bay would compete with them in this regard, but there's not anybody in the National League, and I don't think there's anybody in their division, quite frankly, who does a better job around the margins than they do. And so if they can get these guys up here, and Joey Bart and Ramos and Luciano and Matos, and have an everyday lineup for a few years with those guys, they're always going to be able to find people who complement that. And that's how you have a sustainable winner every single year. And I really think, you know, we thought that was going to start in 2022, and they were just a year early, apparently.
Alex Pavlovich with his best interview since 2016. Thank you so much, man. Good to talk to you, as always.
All right, guys, take it easy.
There he is, Alex Pavlovich. That's always a pleasure. When we come on back, it is the longest commercial-free segment of the entire day, so just sit on back and rip the knob off. Enjoy. Damon Ratto and Kolsky here on 95.7 The Game, brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full-service banking, no compromises.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Been great talking about the first place Giants with our friend Alex Pavlovich. We got an awful lot to get into in our longest commercial-free segment of the day, and we got NBA playoff happening tonight. We got Game 3. Chris Paul going to strap it up and get ready to go with his Suns looking to go up 3-0 on the clip joint. I would love it if that actually happened tonight. I know we are rooting for... Here's the thing, Ray, I will root for a Game 7 if it looks possible. If it doesn't look possible, I'll root for the sweep if that's where you can go. Sweeps are significant. Sweeps buy time to rest. A rested Phoenix Suns team sounds like an NBA champion. They have an awful lot of reason to sweep the Clippers. We'll see if they can get it going tonight. There are already rumors out there that Paul George is a little tired. Oh, boy. A little tired.
What does that mean?
I don't know. Turn your mic on.
Whenever you, yeah.
It means nothing is what it means. It's just
a little tired, Ray.
Yeah, he's just a little tired. Everybody's tired.
Who's not? I'm a little tired.
Yeah, I mean, just it's the kind of nonsense that you would like to think that playing every other day would eliminate, but everybody has to have something when even when they have nothing. Well, Paul George is a little tired. Yeah, they're exhausted, and they just grind through it at this point. That's it.
Well, right, but I mean,
are you a little tired?
I'm exhausted. If I'm to be frank,
newborn,
as John Collins would say, to be frank with you, I'm exhausted. But here's the problem. Our guy Mark Medina wrote the USA Today article, right? The headline is Paul George, quote, looks pretty tired, end quote, while logging heavy minutes during Clippers playoff run. And that quote is from the head coach. And I just, like, I don't know what are we trying to accomplish?
Why would you
that?
Put that out there?
Why would you say that? Because whenever he's this is the full quote. Whenever he's taking a lot of jump shots and not really attacking, you can see he's a little tired, but he wants to win. Well, do you think you're defending Paul George right now?
You're not making it better.
You're not.
You're not. You should say, my guy eats nothing but raw red meat. He ready.
Yeah. Yeah, he missed some shots, but he's ready to go. Well, I don't understand what... So it's either Paul George wants everyone to know he's tired, or his coach is kind of throwing him under the bus. Because being like, well, he's too tired to hit those shots is kind of like saying, he's not good enough.
Maybe he's trying to talk to Paul George about attacking to the basket more, which you would think he would be able to pull him aside and say without engaging anybody else.
Yeah.
But the only correct answer to that question has always been everybody's tired. Everybody wants to be tired because that's what happens when you play 100 games of basketball. You're just tired.
Right. And
so
I'm not sure.
Everybody deals with it or they lose.
Yeah. And like, what did Paul George do that most directly kept the Clippers from winning game two of this series?
Not score 9 more points.
Incorrect. I think there's a very specific moment you can tie directly.
Free throws?
Yes. 2 critical late game free throws missed in a row. I'm not going to let him say I'm a little too tired to hit clutch free throws.
Oh, it takes away your legs, man. So
either you're saying, I don't understand what we're doing here, and it's of a piece with the entire weirdness of the whole Clipper thing. And by the way, that the sort of theory of what Mike Budenholzer's adjustment, he waits forever, he's stubborn, he won't change things till the absolute last minute. It's funny that, I mean, I guess this is, you get what you ask for, but Ty Lue is the opposite of that and not always to his own team's benefit. Ty Lue is make every adjustment all the time.
Right. And the ultimate tinkerer.
Right. Terrence Mann had 40. Let's see what Luke Kennard can give us. You know, it's like I can't keep up. And I wonder what that has to do with the whole weirdness of the Clippers as well, is that they're kind of a different bunch of guys on the floor every different night.
I'm over them.
Me too.
I think that speaks to Ty Lue trying to prove what a great coach he is.
Maybe. I think part of him feels like, I got to keep shaking things up or these guys get bored and check out.
Maybe. I mean, that's another thing about internal team dynamics that we don't know. But it does seem like he wants to win 3 different games on the same night. And I think that's a coaching weakness. I mean, your players are your players. You can't really sort of change them at this point or make them different players. So you go with what you go with. And if he perceives shortcomings, I think he falls into the trap of going, I'm just going to keep doing things until I hit something. I know they're going to adjust to when I hit something, so I have to hit on something else too. So he's making 3 adjustments at once, and you just get tied up.
Meanwhile, in other NBA news, after the Dallas Mavericks watch Rick Carlisle walk away after 12, 13 years, whatever it was, involved as their head coach,
We seem to be gaining some clarity as to what the next version of the Dallas Mavericks is going to look like. Apparently, a new general manager is already on their radar, and I'm wondering if that's not Bob Vargulis just already on premises. Jason Kidd has emerged as a strong front runner to be hired as the next Dallas Mavericks head coach. By the way, Rick Carlisle today took the Indiana Pacers job.
And Rick Carlisle openly recommended that the Mavericks hire Jason Kidd, which leads me to wonder what the hell's going on there at this point. Not the hiring of Jason Kidd, but when the outgoing coach, who basically walked out because he was fed up, said they really ought to hire Jason Kidd, and they go and do it, because what I've read is it's just about a done deal. How does that make any sense at all?
I think it's the other way around. I think it's they decided to hire Jason Kidd. Jason Kidd has a relationship with Luka. They like the sort of, you know, what Jason Kidd can impart upon
a lot
Luka.
Of house credit for Kidd in Dallas as
right.
well.
Right. And then somebody asked Carlisle about it, and he said, yeah, Kidd would be great. I don't think it was, I'm out of here, you guys are awful, but you should really hire Jason Kidd when I'm gone.
And what's his name again? Bob Vargulis?
Haralabob Vargulis, yes.
A.K.A. Haralabob.
Yeah.
It's a good name.
It's a hell of a name.
It's a great name.
Yeah. I don't think he'll be named the GM.
He won't have to be.
Right. He'll be in charge.
Yeah. He's Rasputin. Somebody else will be the czar.
Currently, he is the director of quantitative research and development.
It just sounds like Valar Morghulis from Game of Thrones. It really does. Gets me every single time. So, one other NBA note to pass along. And, you know, this is the kind of thing that if you misquote it, Steve Kerr is going to get angry at Drew Schiller. So, we don't want that to happen. But Steve Kerr basically, I guess, went on with Stephen A. Smith and talked about that Kevin Durant is more gifted as a basketball player than Michael Jordan. Now, a lot of people are just going to read that and say, Steve Kerr just said Kevin Durant's better than Michael Jordan. He did not. He said he was a more gifted player. And I, as a Michael Jordan fan, if you will, it completely agree with Steve Kerr, because Kevin Durant can do things because he's 5 inches taller than Michael Jordan could ever dream of being. I mean, they just don't make human beings that ever played like Kevin Durant until Kevin Durant came along. There is the amount of gifts the man has is it's that his gift stack reaches as high as anyone's ever has ever reached in basketball.
Right. I think. Jabbar is a tricky one, but I would say the three most gifted players in basketball history are Wilt, Durant, and LeBron. And there are probably some old guys I'm missing, but like in terms of Wilt had physical gifts no one else in the NBA possessed. Kevin Durant has physical gifts and basketball skill level for his physical gifts that no one has possessed in the entire history of basketball, ever. I mean, it's that simple. So I actually don't even think this is controversial.
No, it's not. It's
by saying it the way he said it, he gets out of a lot of grief, because frankly, Durant does have a wider palette of elite skills than any other player. I mean, he can do more things at an extraordinary level than anybody else.
Yeah. Let me begin by welcoming everyone to their 5 o'clock hour.